Hello and welcome to Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 6, The Devil's Advocate from 1997. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. With us today, we've covered this movie already. If you are a Cage Club devotee, which I'm sure there's maybe one or two out there. I know that I've listened to every episode. I don't know if you have. You, the hypothetical listener, I mean. But we've covered this movie already for Keanu Club. Our former main man, Keanu Reeves, is the star of this film. Keanu will cross over with Watch the Throne twice, both this and Sweet November. And on both episodes, spoiler alert for the one down the line, same guest. We had to bring her back because we found her and her passion and her devotion to Keanu toward the end of Keanu Club. Darcy DeBose. Hello, Darcy.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for being here. You're here to talk about Charlize, but also, of course, your main man, Keanu Reeves.
Yes, totally. And I definitely snagged the Sweet November just so that I could talk about Keanu.
Yes. Watching the very beginning of this movie when they're like truly in love before things go really, really wrong, I was like, oh, this is the love story that I wanted in Sweet November. Like there's a connection here that I feel like isn't maybe in that movie. And we'll get to that when we get to that. But I was like, there's a spark here between Keanu and Charlize early on where I was like, oh, this is what I want.
Yes, totally. They're like passionate and sort of like real flirty. Whereas in Sweet November, they're like, he's so hesitant with it all that there's no like real chemistry until like later in the movie.
Yeah. Seeing them at the beginning of this really made me want them to be a real couple in actual reality, real life. But it's great. Yeah, the chemistry they have, it's so cool.
Yeah, and I was actually trying to sort of like debunk that whole thing about them maybe dating in real life. And I think that they probably did for like a brief period of time. But it was never like official from either one of them. There's just like a lot of like paparazzi and like
a few
articles, yeah, about them like getting caught in like an embrace, like out in front of a restaurant and stuff like that. Wishful thinking. Maybe they actually were a couple at one point.
Well, I know that my Zack Attack and now Too Fast, Too Forever, Magic Mike's boyfriend material co-host Joe Too, whenever he sees Zeph and a cute girl on screen, he really hopes that they, to clean it up, dated. He always hopes that the on-screen couples were, you know, carried over into real life. So if that is true, they would have been a really cute couple. And I know that they are also, in theory, talking about returning to some kind of John Wick, Atomic Blonde type movie. So if they do that, Darcy, you will have to be back.
Yeah,
you are our official resident Keanu expert on Watch the Throne.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
But I would love to see that movie because they are good together. And now they're at this weird sort of same stage in their career where they're both action stars. After a career sort of like intermittent with action, like now they're both like at the top of their action game. And to put them together in another movie that's not a romance movie or just a drama would be, yes, that's exactly what I want.
Yes, same.
Yeah, I'll take them doing anything together, to be quite honest. Like, even if we get Sweet November 2, I'm cool with that, guys. I would love the action crossover stuff, sure, but I'll take whatever I can get.
Sweet November 2, she didn't die after all.
Right.
Twin sister.
Exactly.
That's the sister we never see in the movie. No.
Oh.
All
so
right.
What's strange about this movie, strange might not be the right word, but watching it from Charlize's perspective, it's weird how it's kind of a horror movie.
Yes.
That's really sort of terrifying, and you feel real bad. Like, when we watched it for Keanu Club, and every previous time that I've watched this movie, you're watching from Keanu's perspective because he's the main character, and you're like, man, what a drag she is. Like, you know, he's trying to do this. He's got this important job, and he's got this powerful boss, and he's trying to do good things, and, you know, defend people who maybe don't deserve a defense, but, like, that's their right, and he's doing a good job. And now here, you're like, oh God, she's trapped in a loveless marriage, surrounded by maybe literal demons, and no one is believing anything she says.
Totally. It was hard too, like trying to adjust to be like, oh, I'm supposed to be watching this for Charlize and not Keanu, and like having to be like, okay, his whole thing is totally separate. But yeah, it's like a literal, like I only watched this for the first time like less than a year ago. Like I remember my parents always watching it when I was a kid. I didn't realize how like literally supernatural it actually is.
Yeah.
And how like he's like literally the devil.
Yeah, and she's the one who sort of deals with most of, like she's more clued into the demonic presence at first than he catches on, you know? So she's definitely got like this, it's much more of like a Rosemary's Baby from her angle, where people are lying to her and telling her that she's seeing things, and She goes from like this just happy go lucky, the world is like her oyster character, to insane and committing suicide. Like, it's just one of the darkest arcs that we've come across for her characters yet.
To be fair, he only catches on after she kills herself. Like, it takes that bolt of an action for him to be like, wait, maybe there's something weird going on here.
Yeah.
He's not very clued into anything that she's going through. The fact that she has like this vision where she like sees a baby and like, you know, with a knife and like all that, we'll get to that, but it's just like all these crazy experiences that she's living, not just seeing the flashes of demonic faces, but like these visions, these like experiences she's having, and she tells it to him and he's like, oh no, you're crazy, Al Pacino was with me today. And it's just like, well, think about it.
Yeah, the Rosemary's Baby sort of comparison is really nice, because it's like, even when they move into that apartment, their neighbors, like the wife of the neighbor, like when she's like painting the apartment and she just tells her every color essentially sucks until she gets to red, and then it's like, okay, cool, yeah, like stick with the red. It's just, it's very, like, yes, like, the neighbors are kind of in on it kind of thing.
Well, Mike, we talked about when we did Inconceivable for Cage, but that was sort of gaslighting the movie. This is kind of gaslighting the movie, too.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, no, you're not crazy, but, like, doing things that, like, make her seem crazy. Like, it's, oh, man, you just feel so bad for her in this.
Well, because it makes me feel crazy. Like, I feel like it drives the viewer crazy also, you know, because we're in the same state of mind. It's like, no, we're seeing what she's seeing. I believe her. Like, I know she's telling the truth. Why don't the other characters listen to them? Like, I feel like she does at that time, you know? And it totally helps that, like, she's amazing in this role as well.
Yeah.
And that she's just selling all of this so much that, like, I don't know. Like, I've seen this a few times before, but I've never really tracked the Charlize stuff, and it's just like, it's upsetting and disturbing on a different level this time.
Sad. Yeah, she plays like the quintessential sort of Southern Belle, like the strong Southern Belle, similar, I guess, kind of to the Trial and Error character, but not as Manic Pixie Dream Girly, but just sort of that, like, that idealized Southern girl,
sort of a free spirited person,
but also like stronger than that character. I mean, that character was like whimsical and like had her stuff together kind of, but like here,
well, let's get this straight. Okay, in Trial and Error, her character gets a flat tire and decides to live where she gets her flat tire, like literally sets up shop like in a trailer and lives in that town. So
yep. But also two movies in a row, like we mentioned last week, two movies in a row law movies, so there you go.
Oh,
connection there. So maybe
nice.
She's just a Southern character in law movies, I guess.
Typecast.
But then she moves in New York and she sort of is able to sort of live this high class lifestyle. But at the end of the movie, when Al Pacino says to Keanu, he's just like, you've been trying to get a better, like basically trying to like improve upon your girl ever since you moved here. I'm like, no, like that doesn't make sense. Like that doesn't work, because she's Charlize Theron. Like, she's beautiful. She's good for him. She's like this strong character. And Al Pacino's like, oh no, since you've been here, like you've been looking for other women, but like it doesn't work. It's kind of like in those movies where like there's like the beautiful woman who's just like in glasses or whatever. And it's like, oh no, she's mousy. Like, she's not the right girl for you. You're looking for like an uptown, classy lady. And it's like, well, no, I mean, because she's great.
Yeah, and I mean, even especially like she gets even more attractive when she changes her hair, or at least that's like the movie saying, like, look, like she can pull off all these different looks, and you know, like she's evolving in fashion and she's keeping up and all this stuff. It is, yeah, there's no way. Like, I just think Keanu is in love with his job. Like, that's the other woman in his life in this movie, you know? It's just
totally.
He can't separate the life from the work. And it's not just his wife that falls to the wayside, but like his mother too, you know, and eventually, you know, everything comes crashing down.
But then it also starts over, doesn't it?
Oh yeah. This movie should get a sequel. That's that would be great if it picks up right where it left off with all the same actors.
There's no reason why you can't, other than, you know, we've waited 20 years now and, you know, you can't do the same movie, I guess a sequel or whatever, but like they're off to live a life, and maybe they go on to like break up and move to San Francisco and like get back together in Sweet November. Maybe that's
I mean, Keanu can, you know, probably move to a lake house with a magical mailbox and meet a whole other woman in his life. You never know.
God, I really want to watch Lake House again. I don't know why.
It's a treasure.
It was a treasure. I was also thinking about casting Sandra Bullock in our recast game, but I did not, even though I wanted to, but we'll get to that in a little bit. I do want to say that at the end of the Devil's Advocate episode we did for Keanu Club, we were talking about how we wanted this magical machine that would let us see any version of any movie we wanted with whatever actors we wanted. We didn't really get to recasting this, or maybe we said it earlier in the episode, I don't know. What was really funny, Mike, was that at the very end, we were talking about how we talked about the religious expert, but we wanted to have a law expert on, and we wanted to have somebody with firearms, because you were talking about, you know, the guns, and like maybe they shot too many bullets or whatever. And you said, you know, we're going to have to do a Charlize Club and a Pacino Club, and so here we are.
Wow.
Less than a year after we recorded that episode, we are here recording the same movie for one of those two. So I guess, as of this recording, who knows when this releases, no sexual harassment claims have been brought against Al Pacino, so he's still in the running for a podcast down the line. I don't think we're going to do him, but I guess we have to devote some time to either discussing the law. Darcy, are you either a law expert or a firearms expert?
Neither, actually.
All right, never mind. Maybe we have to do it two more times. We'll do an Al Pacino podcast, and we'll do a...
Jeffrey Jones? Is that the guy?
A New York City podcast, where New York City is the fifth character. But yes, I wanted to give you credit, Mike, that you sort of predicted the future without knowing.
Awesome. I should be in John Milton's firm as his, like, you know, fortune teller, whatever have you. Can we talk briefly about Florida Keanu in this movie for a few minutes?
I love it.
The glasses. Well,
I love the glasses. I actually wrote that down as pros for this movie, is Keanu in glasses.
I've seen this like from beginning to end a handful of times. I think I've missed those every time I watch this movie. I don't know what it is, but that's a terrific look for him.
Yeah. Oh, well, I've missed things in this movie that we will get to that I don't know how I missed before. Maybe I was taking notes or whatever. I don't know what it was, but I've missed some weird, crazy things in this. I still think my favorite line in this movie, in a movie full of lines, maybe it's not my favorite line, but my favorite line delivery, is when Keanu is in the apartment. They're getting ready to go down to the party, and he just says, "Oh, baby," in like this real southern twang, and I just love it. Like, Keanu is just like, good old southern boy is just perfect.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, super charming.
That brings me to Florida Keanu's second attribute, which is the accent.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up on it way more this time than in previous screenings.
Oh, it's very pronounced.
But I had always sort of remembered it being there and then disappearing. But it's really there, like, all the time now. It's like music or something.
He definitely sticks with it. And it's funny because, like, my boyfriend walked in at the end of me watching it, and he's like, "Wait, what accent is that?" And I was like, "He's from Florida."
There's lots of states in the South. I don't know which one he picked, but... Yeah.
Well, because Charlize is rocking that Southern accent, too. Like, she sort of sounds like a Southern belle, like that sort of... that a little bit of that twang, too. And, like, they both sort of keep it. I mean, I think it maybe dials back a little bit, but, like, it's still there throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
I think she works it a lot better. I actually feel like she does a really good accent. I think she's putting in, like, a sort of a higher... caliber performance. I don't know necessarily. I feel like her performance belongs in like a more sort of serious movie. And you know what I'm saying? Like, everyone else seems to be playing a little looser than her. I mean, her character is definitely the most tragic and needs to sort of be, I guess, played less comic. Like, you can't really put any sort of like fun edge to her too much, you know, whereas I feel like Pacino's really hamming it up, and Keanu really gets to ham it up. Well, I'm just
so
saying, like,
yelling.
Yeah, the rest of the movie just feels like it's on less of a realistic level, and she's just, like, really good in this, and I just feel like her stuff is a little... just like on a different level than everyone else.
I mean, she's literally in a different movie. Like, she is in that horror film. Like, it is, there are horror elements to Keanu's side of things, but it's sort of like a supernatural thriller more than, like, she's trapped in a movie where, like, she's fighting monsters and, like, it's a fight to the death and she dies in the end of her movie. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's, she's in a different movie. She can't ham it up as much. I also noticed, like, every time I watch this movie, I loved it originally because of how theatrical and over the top it was and how much Pacino hams it up, but, like, the more I watch it, the more I just genuinely like it as a movie. I think it's well made. I think, you know, people are really over the top, but I think they're still acting well. I think Keanu is great in this. Mm-hmm. I think Charlize is great in this. I think Al Pacino, for at this stage in the his career, post-Hoo-ah, from the P.S. I Love Hoffman episode, he's still really good in this. this. I think that, like, for the most part, like, it's a well-made movie. It's just also at the same time completely bananas.
There's so much going on, and like all the CG at the end is just like, what is happening right now?
I'm really glad they saved a lot of that. I think I said that on our Keanu Club episode is like Charlize gets to see sort of like the demons under the skin, which is a great effect, and a little bit of like the warping of the faces. And I'm glad they didn't go overboard with any of that stuff and they save it for the end, because like, once it's sort of a barrage of effects, it's following the story is out of control. You know, everything is at a crescendo. This movie is very like operatic, in all the better and all like the good ways, you know, like acting wise, like set design, grandeur, you know, it's just very opulent, and very cool to watch. And for a 2-hour and 20-minute movie, this thing flew by. I mean, maybe again because I've seen it so much, but really it really felt brisk. Like it just keeps moving. There's no real moment I feel where it just kind of sits and stalls.
I mean, I find the areas where Al Pacino is just yelling for a long time to be to where I sort of like zone out, actually. But other than that, I agree. Like, when I started it again today, after seeing it for the first time a few months ago, I was just like, I cannot believe this movie's 2.5 hours long. Like, it just feels like a regular, like, 90-minute movie.
And what's great about it is I think they spend the right amount of time in each sort of major area. Like, they spend the right amount of time in Florida. They spend the right amount of time in New York. And then, like, there's sort of the third act still in New York, but you're also kind of in hell, sort of. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's the right amount of time devoted to each. And so, like, it never feels like you're in any one place too long. You're not like, oh, I wish we got more of that because it feels appropriate. And what's also kind of smart, I think, that we don't see it enough in movies, especially the movies that we talk about on the podcast, is like there's the whole Delroy Lindo subplot in the middle of this movie that, like, you know, I guess ties into the overall themes, but like is basically introduced and then wrapped up in the middle of the movie. Like, it's like we know that this murder case isn't going to last the entire thing. Like, that's too long for sort of how simplistic it is, especially given how good Keanu is at his job. And so the fact that, like, they introduce a case and they resolve that case and they introduce another case and that's the big one that we're going to end on, that's smart too, I think.
Yeah, it, like, keeps things moving along.
Yeah, he actually lawyers in this movie, you know? Like, it's not just a movie about being a lawyer, but, like, we get to see, like, 2 or 3 jury selections, like, trials. Like, he has to go talk to these people and, like, track them down. And, like, that whole stuff with Craig T. Nelson, that's just really well handled. Like, that could be its own movie, right? Yeah. And it would be, like, the only case in a movie that wasn't as sort of like sure of itself maybe, or didn't have enough other stuff going on with it. I think like if this didn't also want to be, you know, all supernatural and devilishly cool and all that stuff, maybe just it would be about this Delroy Lindo murder case, much like the later Keanu courtroom drama that, what was that called, Joey, when it was him and Bridget Jones?
The Whole Truth.
The Whole Truth,
oh,
yeah.
Wow. I think I started that once and didn't really.
Yeah, this would just turn out to be like that. You know, that's what you would get. And this is just way better. This is something whole, like, this is all something entirely different.
It's also entirely different from the lawyer movie that we get last week, where it's just like, hey, we're going to have a broad comedy just going to take place in a law room. In a law room. In a courtroom, as opposed to, like, we're in a courtroom, but there's actual law going on. There's actually, like, cross-examination.
Here's the trailer for last week's movie. He's Kramer, and he's a lawyer.
Yeah.
Like, that's basically last week's movie. Like, yeah, you're right. This is, like, really into the lifestyle of, you know, the rich and famous, or at least the rich or the elite, yeah, and the people who run the world.
And it is nice that they actually, like you said, they, like, let him lawyer. If the devil is actually, like, recruiting you to be a lawyer because you never lose and you turn out to be the devil's son, like, maybe they should sort of, like, give examples of how, like, badass you are at never losing a case and things like that. So I feel like that really did play out well, and it was something that sort of, like, kept it going without any lulls, because the next case was just, like, something new and fresh.
You know, and speaking of how badass Keanu is, the fact that he's able to, every time I watch this movie, I still can't believe that this happens. He's able to win a case where his client is literally jerking off to the young girl counting. Like, how is this happening in court? I'm like, this is so gross. Like, he's, like, miming what he did to her, and then they tilt a little bit down or whatever, and he's, like, he's got his hand in his pants. I'm just like, oh, God. And the fact that Keanu is able to, like, overcome that, at least the first time around. The second time around, he's like, nope, I'm done.
Yeah.
But the first time around, he's just like, okay, you're disgusting, but I'm still going to get you off because this is my job. I mean, he's going to get himself off, too, if you know what I mean. But I'm going to get you off, and then I'm going to go take, you know, a $250,000 bonus or whatever to go up to New York and get this whole luxurious lifestyle. He's badass, like you said, Darcy, but he's also, like, able to overcome the most disgusting traits of the people that he has to defend.
I mean, I guess that's your job as a defense lawyer. Like, he's a lawyer for the bad guys. He's got to do it.
What I kind of found interesting about Charlize's character is, like, early on when they're celebrating that win, because that is, like, the opening scene, which is even more, like, shocking that the movie opens, like, with that case about the teacher who was molesting his students and stuff. But after he wins that case, someone says something at the bar, and Charlize is like, we don't talk shop, or like, the case is closed, or whatever. It's like, she's okay with it too, to a degree, which I didn't pick up on last time. Like, it's, I don't think it's supposed to be a big thing, like, oh, she has no moral compass like Keanu, not whatsoever. But she has an idea that, like, you know, he's getting bad people off from jail time, and she's okay with it because it's going to afford, like, a lavish lifestyle. So I don't know if that's entirely right.
But I also don't know how in tune she is with Keanu's abilities, because when they get to New York and they show him the apartment, they show them the apartment, she says to him, like, are you really this good? Like, I know she knows he's a good lawyer, but she's like, are you this good? Like, the fact that they have this massive building and each floor only has two apartments, and she's like, oh, like, I knew you were good at your job, but, like, I didn't know you were this. Like, this is crazy good.
But I also have a feeling, like, Keanu didn't even realize what he was worth until he got there, too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so maybe they were both a little green about the whole situation.
And I think it's, like, her demeanor, both in Florida and when they first get to New York, that really makes this movie so depressing, because she's so optimistic and full of hope and, like, wonder, and just, she's sort of teasing him a little bit, like, he's like, you know, if you don't like this, we can go back, and she's like, yeah, well, she's like, what are you, like, are you kidding? Like, of course we're gonna stay here. She's, like, so happy about the prospect of, like, living in New York and having this luxurious apartment. And then I think the reality sets in that he's never around, that she has nothing to occupy her time with. Like, she says the first time she's never had a job or two jobs. As just sort of time goes on, and she never gets to see Keanu, and she has to find ways to fill her day, and she's with these other women who are, like, more into their bodies and spending money than, like, anything else. And it's just like, oh, like, she's just getting beaten down in, like, these small ways over and over again, and just, it's heartbreaking.
And it is kind of interesting how they use, like, her hair to show the shift, because, like, in the beginning she is, like, so bubbly and excited, and they're talking about, like, having a baby, and she's just, like, these, like, curly locks that are bright blonde, and her voice is just like a bell, and she's, like, so excited about everything. And then as soon as Al Pacino sort of, like, gets in her ear, like, oh, you should put your hair up, you should cut your hair, all this stuff, it changes. And then, and she's just this sad sort of shell of a person that she used to be, with her, like, short dark hair.
It's got to be tough, man, because it's weird. Like, there's this almost, like, I wonder if it's foreshadowing, but the first time they go to New York, it's just, like, for a trial or something, and she gets a call from Keanu, and she's been in a hotel room all day, like, watching TV, eating room service. And later in the movie, when she has that weird baby dream where she sees herself walking down the hallway, like, when she opens her eyes, there's just, like, a tray of food next to her in the TV, and it's almost like she's trapped in this loop of in a room, eating room service, doing nothing. And I don't feel like it's because she doesn't want to do stuff. It's just, like, you know, her options in that world are not conducive to what she wants to do. Part of me feels like there's, like, abandonment issues going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, she says something this time I picked up to Pacino about, briefly mentioned
about daddy issues.
Yeah, about her father. I really wish that they maybe took one more scene to try and explore that a little deeper. I don't know how they could have done that, but I found that really interesting this time.
I'm going to say they don't have to, because, like, you can see how big her daddy issues are when he's just like, because he's now this father figure in her life, right? Because he's basically, I mean, he is literally Keanu's dad. She doesn't know this, but he is her father-in-law. She's so broken and so desperate for that paternal affection that he's like, hey, you should return your natural hair color and, you know, cut your hair. And then literally the next time we see her, she did exactly what he said. So, like, I don't think you need more evidence that, like, she's got daddy issues. Like, the fact that he's, like, this guy that she doesn't really know. Like, she knows that he's her husband's boss, but he's just like, hey, you know this thing that sort of defines you? Like, you should change it. And then the next time we see her, she did exactly that. Like, that is, to me, like, the ultimate sign of, oh, she needs someone to tell her thing. Like, she just wants that paternal, not even, like, affection, but just, like, attention. Like, have someone tell you what to do and how to act and sort of parent you, and the fact that she does it so readily, it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
But also what you were saying earlier, Mike, about the food, is that there's another scene that I was going to make note of when she's trying to wallpaper her apartment. She's eating food out of a box there too. Like,
yeah,
you know, she's eating Popeyes. She's eating
Popeyes out of the box. What's also kind of amazing to me, Mike, is that, you know, a couple episodes ago we did That Thing You Do, and she was helping her dentist boyfriend,
oh my gosh,
wallpaper his office. Like, wallpaper is her thing, I guess.
I'm surprised she didn't go to the dentist in this movie, to be honest. I don't know how many more times she does in her film career.
We will find out.
We're only like a few films in, and we're already getting connections more than when we were doing Keanu Club. Maybe not Sharp Cage. Actions. These are like on Cage Club level. Like, every episode we're getting like one or two connections.
Oh no, better than Sharnections is Theranections. Did we ever talk about, did we coin the term Theranections? I don't remember that. That's better than Sharnections.
Yeah, I don't like Sharnections.
Theranections. The scene where she's talking to Pacino and he's basically like mansplaining hair to her. Like, oh, you should raise your hair. Like, he's basically saying you should smile more, but he's just talking about her hair. Like, it's just like, yeah, it's super icky and super creepy.
It makes sense when you find out he's the devil, right? Like,
well, yes.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm glad that there was something deeper going on there.
Because he also knows exactly what to say to everybody. Like, when they're out to dinner, you know, it's him and Keanu and those three girls that we never see again. And he's like, I bet you're from Michigan. And she's like, oh my God, how did you know that? And he's like, well, you know, he knows everything.
Oh,
and also, whatever he says to the one girl who, like, they're in a public restaurant, and she just goes under the table to do what she's going to do to him, do the dirty corn.
We've got to come up with something better than that for...
Nope. Doing the dirty corn. He just knows how to... Like, it almost like he can see... It's almost like a Next situation from Cage Club, where he can see 2 minutes into the future, but he can see infinitely into the future, I guess, and know exactly what to say to get the desired outcome.
Or it's almost like he's the devil, and he knows your every desire.
Like, he has that ability, yeah, as the devil. He can, you know, control things.
I'm just trying to make a Cage connection here, Mike.
I know, I'm sorry. What I found interesting about that scene, though, while we're at the Mexican restaurant, is he's, like, in the kitchen yelling at Charlize to go to bed, and that he'll be home when he gets home. You know, I felt so bad for her off screen. Like, we don't even get, you know, her voice over the phone or anything, but like, that's just a moment where I hated Keanu in this movie. I was, yeah, like, oh, the influence has its claws in his back at this moment.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick.
Well, this whole movie, basically, once I get to New York, the entire movie is him abandoning her. He leaves her at the party, and she has that scene where she's like, you bailed on me. Like, he's like, no. Yeah. He's like, I needed to do work. She's like, no, you left me there. I had a panic attack. But, like, he bailed on her to go talk to Christabella, who we find out later is his sister. He bailed on her for that, and then he bailed on her for Pacino, and, like, she always comes last. Like, it's like he takes her for granted because he knows that she has nowhere else to go. He knows she's going to be downstairs. He knows she's going to be at home, wherever it is. He doesn't need to check on her because he knows where she is. He can just focus his attention on his law cases or on Pacino or on Christabella or on whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned his sister or half sister or whatever. They're going to try and get freaky at the end. It's just, oh man, I think what it was really smart, like, I get it. I kind of get what Pacino's talking about when he's got the hots for that girl, right? It's just, it's not even that she's prettier or more attractive than Charlize. It's just that she's different, and
exotic. She's Italian.
Well, she's like a businesswoman. She's very assertive. She's like almost dominatrixy kind of, and Charlize is not. Is just a very different type, like more wholesome, more housewife, I guess. Or, and maybe Keanu gets to the city and his dark side takes over, and he realizes, like, that's much more his personality, that's what he wants, and that's why he starts, like, having that freaky sex where, like, his wife starts changing into her and back and forth, and he's, like, under a curse, maybe? I'm not sure. I kind of get the sense that he may be, like, betwixt by an enchantment of some kind at one point, but that's like the moment I get all that.
Yeah, that whole thing, like, devil aspect of it was my reasoning for every single thing that he did, that I was like, oh man, he's being super shitty. And it's like, oh cool, it's because this woman is his half sister who's also the daughter of the devil, and so they're meant to be paired together, so that's why the attraction is so strong, because they're of the same sort of, like, blood, essentially. And Al Pacino sort of just, like, being like the devil, he's this trickster where he's just, like, literally just whispering in everybody's ear and, like, moving people around like pieces on a chessboard to, like, have them do whatever he sees fit. Like, he was talking about how God just, like, observes everything and, like, laughs up in the sky, but he's like on the ground, like in it. But like clearly he's also an
absentee landlord.
Yeah, he's also clearly like orchestrating this whole thing. So it's like he sort of blames God for like not being around, but like he's also doing the same thing.
He's a fan of man. I love that.
I'm a fan of man. But we have to say that, like, in that crazy sex scene, we have to say that, like, they're having sex because the way to fix this broken marriage is obviously to have a baby. Like, that's the only way that's going to have things get better. He's like, let's make a baby. And then, you know, like, that's not going to work. It's almost like Quentin Tarantino shot this sex scene because, like, he's, like, sucking on toes a lot. And it's just, like, it's a really uncomfortable, like, aside from the fact that he's having sex with his half-sister or... worse, like fantasizing about having sex with his half sister. What he's doing is just like, oh, this is like a level of intimacy that like we don't normally see on screen. Like it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Keanu's sex scenes, there's been a bunch of them, and they always seem to show his butt at least or something. Like they don't shy back. Like his, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like they're always like intense to some degree and show nudity and everything. And this, just in the whole sort of like history of sex scenes, is just one of the most bizarre and like weird and just crazy all around altogether. But I really think it gives a good representation of his mental state. And you know, at this point he doesn't know it's his sister, he doesn't know any of this devil stuff is going on, he doesn't really, you know, he's not really clued into any of that yet. So
yeah, she's just a hot chick at work.
Yeah, and I can't imagine what he thinks is actually happening, like if he's really feeling her there and seeing her there or whatever. But there's some like amazing expressions on his face when things switch back and forth, you know. Like, he's really good at, like, shifting the tone. Like, when he's with Charlize, he actually literally looks, like, more worried or caring. And then when it switches to the other girl, he's, like, super happy and excited. And it's just really cool to see him, like, change so quickly. Like, not only is the girl he's with changing, but, like, it's almost as if, like, he himself is bringing out, like, two different sides.
It's that change that, like, we see when we're at the Mexican restaurant, and they're all having, like, the time of their life, and we smash cut back to the apartment, and that's when Charlize, like, wakes up looking scared, looking somehow younger than she's looked all movie, and that's when she walks down the hallway to find the baby, and then, like, you know, they stole my ovaries, that whole thing. It's this juxtaposition of, like, he's having the time of his life, and she is terrified.
She's in her own horror movie.
And what's also weird about that scene, I don't think I noticed it before, maybe, is that, like, she wakes up, and then, like, she wakes up again?
Yeah.
Did you notice that? Like, she, like, wakes up and gets up, and then, like, cut back to her, and she wakes up again. Like, it's like she's trapped in this loop. And it's just like, oh no.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I just imagined it or if it was in the movie where she actually saw herself like walking down the hallway or not, but it definitely helps give it this like, I'm dreaming, I'm awake, I'm not sure what is reality, not like, it's almost, this movie does it quite well a few times. There's almost like these Lynchian moments like that, you know, where it's like, oh, suddenly I'm in Mulholland Drive starring Charlize Theron. Now I need to see that movie, but...
yes, please. Charlize and Sandra Bullock as the two actresses.
Oh my god. Stop.
Do it. Do it. Also around this time I wrote down the line that Al Pacino yells, he's like, got a lot of fingers and a lot of pies. I'm like, that's pretty.
Oh, but that's like right when he's like staring at that dude on the subway when he says that, and Pacino has like the stupidest fucking look on his face I've ever seen. It's like right out of the movie, because he looks like he's blind from the Blind movie. Which one was that on P.S. I Love Hoffman?
Oh, yeah, it's the, oh, God, it was the one where they're at school, Scent of a Woman.
Yeah, so he looks like he's the guy from Scent of a Woman, like, because his eyes are bulging out like that, and then the guy asked him, like, if he's deaf, and I'm like, no, but he might be blind.
One thing I noticed, and I mean, this is another thing that we've seen week in, week out, is that we have a lot of Charlize nudity in this movie. We also have a lot of Charlize just, like, strolling around the apartment in underwear. We have a couple different scenes of her in underwear, though, like, one where she's getting ready for the party, and she's, like, this confident person, then later in the movie, she's almost in the same outfit, but she's opening the window to hear, what's his name, Barzoon get murdered. Eddie Barzoon get murdered. I think she's in the same kind of like, you know, robe and like underwear, like sort of her lounging around the apartment outfit or whatever, but like she looks completely different. Like before she had the hair, she was like this bright, bubbly character. And here, you know, she's got the dark hair, she's being gaslighted, she is terrified, she doesn't know, she has nothing to do, and like, it's the same outfit, it's just a completely different Charlize, and it's kind of, I mean, it's similar, it's crazy how different she looks in a span of like probably 45 minutes.
Yeah.
She's very versatile. She pulls off a lot of different looks in this movie, you know, it's she goes from blonde to brunette, but also long hair to short hair, and she goes from like healthy to mentally ill, and she really, you know, goes through the ringer in this movie, and it reads on her every moment, you know. Like, I really feel like you could pick a scene in this movie and you can track her emotionally, like where she is, you know, how far she's gone at that point or not. Like, I especially like the moment when they all go shopping together and you see like the demons under the skin and stuff, and that's when she, like, you know, all that's all she needed to see was see it once to really confirm that something was wrong,
right?
And it's like once she saw that, like, she could never close her eyes again. I love the concept of her being witness to Eddie's death. I just hate that execution. Hate is a strong word, but I feel like it's a minor misstep in the film. I almost feel like it would have worked better if, like, Eddie was chased into the street from the park and she happened to see him get run over or something. In a movie where my belief has been suspended, you know, so far, the way that shot, it's really hard to believe that she can see, like, across the street, yeah, into Central Park, like, into the woods where this guy is getting knifed.
Need I remind you, the devil has his influence on this. I mean, like, maybe he's giving her, like, super sight and super hearing, so.
I was even thinking, like, that part always confused me too when I ever watched it, because I'm just like, wait, how is she even there? Like, he's clearly, like, out in, like, a forested, like, a, he's in a park and she's, like, in her building, and I always just assumed that she was, like, envisioning it as opposed to, like, literally seeing it. Like, because she does kind of get, like, really manic in that scene, like, putting her hands to her head and everything, but, like, it doesn't really, her gaze doesn't, like, lock onto anything. She's kind of all over the place. So to me, I always see that scene confusing, but also thinking that maybe she's, like, literally just, like having some sort of sight, like she's seeing it as opposed, yeah, to, like, actually looking at it happening.
Yeah, I don't think that I really thought that she could see it. I think she just sort of somehow heard that it was happening.
Or knew that there was something. Somehow?
Yeah. Mm. And, like, that's why she goes to the window to open. She's like, what's going on? And that's, and then we cut to, because, I mean, like, there, it's so far away. Like, I don't think there's a way for her to see Eddie Barzun getting beaten by those homeless, not homeless people.
But I do agree that that scene is very confusing, because you don't really know, like, if it, right, if she is supposed to be literally seeing it, it's cut really bad. Like, there's no way that, like you said, that she could really look that far. But that scene's a little choppy, I feel.
She just seems to be in tune with bad things going on, right? Like, her spider sense are going haywire. It's like, yeah, she may not be able to see it, but she can feel it. I don't think it helps that that scene is sort of cross-cut between her and Eddie, and then Pacino explaining to Keanu about Eddie also. Yeah. There's, like, this weird three-way editing going on there, too, that sort of doesn't help the sequence. But I love the intent of it all.
I think she kind of has to be there, otherwise she needs something else. Because, like, that's kind of the breaking point, right? Because then, like, Keanu goes back to the apartment, and the doorman's like, oh, no, she didn't look good. She just wandered off to the church. We tried to stop her. And then that's when she, like, throws off her blanket and is fully naked and all, like, cut up and bruised. And, like, that's when she admits that Pacino had gone to sleep with her, like, to sleep with her, right? And, like, I feel like that Eddie Barzun murder is kind of the breaking point.
Maybe she's, like, maybe while that's happening, what's really happening is Pacino is, like, taking advantage of her in the apartment.
Maybe.
And so she's, like... It was another Keanu movie where some poor woman was getting raped on the subway and she was envisioning...
Exposed.
Yeah, and spoilers for Exposed, but she, like, didn't realize she, like, killed her rapist or something was the deal. Like, she blacked out and had, like, a vision or something. So maybe there's some kind of, like, traumatic escapism happening here being represented.
Poor sweet Ana de Armas.
That timeline seems so kind of off, because it's like, I just assume that Pacino is orchestrating the dudes, like, beating the shit out of the Eddie guy. So it's like, he's talking to Keanu, but it's also like, has enough time passed for, like, the result of whatever happened be like, is it really time for Eddie to die? Like, I feel like Pacino is still with Keanu, sort of like explaining to him how Eddie is, but, like, there hasn't been any, like, enough time with whatever it was that Eddie did for him to, like, come to the conclusion that he needed to die. I feel like that whole sort of scene is, like, in the timeline seems really off, to where it's then, like, he finds her at the church and she's like, he was there, like, essentially raped me, and he's like, but I was with him. And so that, I feel like that could have been executed, or sort of like, I don't know, like, I wish there had been, like, one other element that sort of, like, them in the apartment together, like Pacino with her, somehow, or like something off when he's with Keanu, so that there's some sort of like, I don't know, I feel like there was something missing to sort of bring that all together.
No, because you're right, because I mean, like, we can understand and get that the devil can be in more than one place at once, but the fact that we're like not shown that
right
at any yeah. point up to that point in the movie, it's like, oh, like that makes sense, but like it would have been cool to see him, you know, somehow cross-cutting, like he's with Keanu in the courtroom and then somehow he like drops by the dressing room where they are. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
that he's in, like, literally in two places at once, because then we can be like, oh, right, that's why it was in the film earlier. Like, I get, like, I sort of gets a little bit muddled, but I also feel like if you sort of space it out more, then we're going to something closer to probably like a 3-hour movie. And I feel like there sort of has to be, like, I don't think there's too much, but I feel like I'm okay with it being a little muddled, knowing that he's the devil and is able to, you know, see what's happening now and also what's coming, and able to sort of summon demons to go kill Eddie Barzun. And also at the same time, his physical body is in court, but he's also like his spirit or whatever is, you know, raping Charlie. Like, it's all, you know, like I'm okay with like the jumbly timeline, as opposed to trying to pad it out for another 20 minutes and be like, well, he's here and he's here and he's here. Like, I think there's probably a middle ground that would be good. But I'd rather have it be like this than like overly explained, this is how everything happened.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, and I think in this moment in the movie, it's really full steam ahead for Keanu's character. And so we get what we need to get for his perspective. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't need to see Pacino show up at the apartment, because it's in Keanu's point of view now. So, like, you know, he's not going to believe her. We have to sort of be like, well, is she telling the truth or not? You know, like, we have to be sort of more in his mindset during those moments.
Right, we're supposed
now.
To think that she's crazy. Like, that's the whole point.
Yeah, especially us being on her side the whole movie. Like, we need that moment where we can question her.
Right, exactly.
But I think it's in those scenes at the end when they're in the church and then everything that happens after, where she's giving, like, the best performances of the movie.
Oh, she's so good. She's so, like, where, intense.
It's especially, I think, because, like, as the movie goes on, we start spending more and more time with Pacino and Keanu, and Pacino is obviously hamming it up, and then, like, we smash to this church where it's just the two of them, really. It's Keanu and Charlize. And she's, like, so vulnerable and so broken. And you know, even though he might not believe her, because he's like, you know, he was with me, like, something happened to her. Like, the way that she delivers these lines to him, it's like, oh, like, she's been through something.
He let himself in. You need to know that.
Who let himself in?
The bath was running or something. I didn't hear him, I swear to you. And then we talked. We talked for hours, and I haven't talked to anyone, really talked to anyone, in so long.
Did somebody hurt you?
Milton.
What?
He fucked me. I think I wanted him to, but then I couldn't stop him. He begged, he just wouldn't stop.
Yeah, and she's just really good at a breakdown. Like, I love watching her sort of fall apart. She's really good at it.
Yeah, and I think this is where Keanu is maybe starting to realize the extent of his neglect towards her. You know, when it's too late to do anything about it, I guess. And he makes a great sort of acting shift, I feel, for the rest of this movie too, where he's in the what have I done mode,
right,
which I feel he plays really great. But yeah, Charlize is just like, she's so incredible, and like, this is such an early role for her, and already she's, I don't want to say upstaging, because she's not really in any scenes where she has to go head to head per se with Pacino or Keanu, but like, I feel like she's of that caliber almost already, you know?
Already.
It's like, I feel like she's been in like 20 movies by now.
But this is her 6th movie, and for Keanu, this was like the halfway point. Like, this was, I think, 39, I want to say? Because for some reason, I remember that The Matrix was 41, and we wound up with 72. So, I mean, like, we're like on the back half of Keanu's career, at least as it is now, and here, like, we are 2 years removed from her first movie, she's already able to do this. It's just like, and you know, knowing her backstory, like, she didn't grow up wanting to be an actress. She wanted to be a dancer. For her to be this good this early, it's like, whoa.
That's funny that she wanted to be a dancer, and yet, like, I feel like she's a very graceful actress or actor. Like, the yep. way that she can play a scene, you know, it's like a dance. It's really interesting.
Especially, and she really doubles down, because from the church, we go to the hospital to sort of treat her wounds and then check her into the mental hospital. But, like, when she's on that gurney, it's almost like she's, like, a confession. Like, it's almost, in a weird way, not that Keanu is her priest, but, like, she's sort of, like, confessing and apologizing and, like, asking for forgiveness. And, like, it's all, like, it's, like, two scenes in the span of, like, 3 minutes where it's just, like, oh, wow, like, she is great in this. And I know that she was good in this in the past, but, like, not having watched the movie to see her, watching it this time now to see her specifically, it's, like, oh, wow.
It's money. Blood money, Kevin. We just drank it down, both of us. We knew it. When in those cases, taking the money, we knew they were guilty. But you just kept on winning. And every time. I can't look at myself in the mirror and I see a monster. Don't do this, Kevin. Please take me home. Please don't do this.
Yeah, I mean, we're more focused on her and looking for the nuance, you know, and like trying to pick apart the performance. I feel like that's something with Cage and Keanu and now Charlize that I can rely on when movies are bad. It's like, okay, well, at least I can sort of sink into what they're doing. But when a movie's good, it's like even better because you pick up on all these little traits that may have come before. You might see them come up later. And that's really cool to track as well, you know, like Cage, like when we got like Cageisms and Keanuisms and things like that. I feel like her things are popping up, you know, definitely like she's an amazing screamer. Like she can scream for joy and for fear, and they're different and they're both amazing.
She can also kill herself and die with the best of them. This is the sixth movie, the sixth episode, and she's already died 3 times. Oh, this one, well, I don't even know if this is the most gruesome one. You know, she was eaten by the plant monster or the corn monster. She was shot in the face as a mercy kill in 2 Days in the Valley. And then here, you know, she like basically jams a huge shard of glass like deep into her throat. And it's just like, oh, wow, like this is gruesome.
She's so calm and badass when she does that, though. And then like Keanu has the most epic freak out face I've ever seen when he like lunges at her and like the nurse comes in, and his face is so contorted and like he's so like upset. I feel like I've never seen him act like that before.
Yeah, he's got a lot of sort of freakouts in this movie, I guess. That's one of them. There's the, you know, the famous like lawyer freakout. Is that the one in this one? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
I just keep thinking of the creepy smile he gives himself and that weird wink in the beginning.
Oh, where he like almost breaks his own neck trying to wink. There's one moment early where he's being recruited at that bar. I don't know, like fish and chip bar or whatever.
Oh, where the greatest song in rock and roll history is being played?
Show me your tattoo. The guy's like, we want to recruit you. And he does like this almost like the laughs like Nick Cage would. He's like, ha ha. Or something. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, that's crazy. Like, he's really letting loose and exploring his abilities in this movie.
I mean, he bites her ass while they're dancing.
Yeah.
I mean, that couldn't have been in the script. I mean, come on.
It's wonderful.
Unless that was in the script and he's like, here's why I'm doing the movie. Someone literally wrote this in their script. Like, I need to meet this person.
And then later on, he like sucks on her ear and like takes out her earrings.
Oh, that.
And then like passes it back to her. It's so weird. That's they had to have been dating. I cannot.
Yeah, that feels like an improv moment based off of past intimacy or something. Like, remember that time, like, I almost choked to death on your ear when we were making out? It's like, let's incorporate that.
Oh, boy. But what's also kind of funny in terms of the, I guess, chemistry with Charlize is that after Charlize is dead, they go to that They basically enter hell at the end of the movie, and it's revealed that Pacino is the devil and Christabella is his sister. Christabella sort of morphs a little bit into Charlize, or like changes her appearance to look a little bit more like Charlize. And it's like, oh, like you have such a chemistry with your wife and you have such a chemistry with Charlize, like let me make myself look a little bit more like her so that you and I can get it on better.
Well, she had like the curly hair, right?
And yeah.
And
yeah.
I figured that's why Pacino told Charlize to switch it, because it's too much like his sisters
who he's her up with.
Yeah, who he's destined for.
Interesting.
But speaking of morphing, there's some, I don't know how I missed this, either at least last time, or if maybe not every time, but I never saw before. I don't remember seeing before.
I didn't notice it either.
Al Pacino morphs into a young Keanu.
Yeah, that you never noticed
angel.
That?
No.
That's the most insane part.
I don't know how I mean, there's a whole lot of insane. There's a whole lot of crazy in this scene. But that, I was just like, wait, what is happening?
Yeah, he sort of turns into like a blue devil for a second or two. He's in like full, I don't know if it's actually Pacino, but there's a guy standing there and like looks like Tim Curry in Legend almost, but blue.
But then he becomes like Shia in Constantine, like
yes!
an angel that yeah. sort of soar off at the end.
Like, I'm not saying I understand it, but no. I definitely remember that being like one of those final, holy shit, like what the fuck is going on now moments at the end of this movie.
Yeah, it's like, what does it mean?
No answers.
No answers.
Nobody knows.
Just revel in the wonder that is that last act of the movie.
He sets the reset button by blowing his brains out.
Yeah.
For the first time in a Charlize movie, she comes back from the dead.
Oh, that was such a relief. How good was it to see her back like her old
yep.
self again?
With the curly hair, and then they ride off into the sunset, guided by, they think, a friend, but actually Al Pacino, where vanity, definitely my favorite sin.
Mm-hmm.
Love it so much. Two little things that I found out about this movie that I think I mentioned both of these on the Keanu Club podcast, but I'm bringing up again here because it's Charlize, is that she, for the entire 3-month shooting period in New York, spent an hour a day with a psychotherapist to practice schizophrenia. So she's sort of the method actress here. And also, she said, I remember reading this on the Keanu Club and being like, huh, that's interesting. But knowing where she's come already, it's sort of weird. She wasn't sure if she wanted to do this movie because it required the nudity that she turned down Showgirls for. But like, she's been naked or, you know, in revealing clothing pretty much in every movie so far. I mean, it's not to this extent, I know, but like...
Yeah, have you seen Showgirls? Like, it's like... They're basically walking through that movie naked.
Right.
I think nudity is one thing. Like, this is, you know, I feel like this is one thing, but, like, Showgirls is so close to porno.
Like, but I'm just saying, like, you know, she was talking about turning this movie down because she didn't know if she wanted to go naked, but, like, she was naked. Like, there was the unfortunate shots in Urban Harvest. She was naked in 2 Days in the Valley. You know, she was in her bra, at least in That Thing You Do. You know,
she was
Hollywood
in a bed
Confidential.
Sheet
she was. In, yep, so it's just all that something. Kind of stuff. It's just, like...
Well, I could see that.
Yeah. Just, but yeah, then. Those are the only notes about Charlize from IMDb, though. Darcy, do you have any other thoughts about The Devil's Advocate, either about Charlize or anything you have to get off your chest about your guy Keanu before the recast game?
No, I think that I kind of ticked off all my points that I had marked down.
Mike, anything else after the second run through of The Devil's Advocate for our podcasts?
There's actually just one Keanu thing I caught, and I don't know if we ever mentioned this. I think it came up maybe once on Keanu Club, and you can catch it in a couple movies, but it's pretty predominant here. Keanu's stomach scar.
Yeah.
He's aware of his stomach scar? Okay.
Yeah.
I sort of forget about it all the time. I have no idea where it came from or how he got it, but there it
it's
is.
It's from a motorcycle accident.
Oh, okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
In that really terrible stretch of his life.
Yeah, where everyone died. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Side note, have you guys watched that like journey into the career of...
The unauthorized documentary?
And they pretty much blame him for 9/11 and
yes!
Oh, yeah. Oh, we talked about that on... We did a whole episode of Keanu Club about that documentary, if you want to listen
to
that.
Yeah, you got to listen to that show. It's insane. Okay. It's just me and Joey losing our minds for an hour. Like,
yeah.
Can you believe this? Can you believe this?
Like, I watched it, and then, like, to the end, I was just like, are you kidding me? They literally just blamed him for all of the tragedies of the 90s. Like, I cannot right now.
They blamed him, like, his sister got canceled, like, it's Keanu's fault, and
it's
then,
his curse.
Boom, 9/11. It's like, wait, what?
Don't
listen to Keanu Reeves, the unauthorized documentary, or Journey to Success, I think.
Journey
the unauthorized
to
documentary.
Success. Yeah.
That's a movie that was so unseen that I had to add to Letterboxd. Like, it wasn't on Letterboxd when I went to log it. Like, just nobody had, like, seen that. But, you know, at least the three of us paid that random Amazon seller, you know, a couple dollars to get the DVD. So somebody's making money off of Journey to Success.
Probably the guy who made it selling it on
Amazon. Recast game. So, Mike, you're going to run this, but just running down the rules. Actually, sorry, not recast game. Hollywood Tycoon. I want to get in my brain calling it Hollywood Tycoon. Nico's name. Thank you, Nico, for letting us use this. The rules of the recast game, the rules of Hollywood Tycoon are as follows. If we were remaking this movie today, who would we cast in each of the big parts? Mike can give a rundown when we go through it. There are only two rules. Number one, we cannot turn a female character into a male role, and we cannot whitewash. We cannot take a character who is not white and cast a white actor or actress in that role. In both instances, the reverse is fine. We can turn a male character female, and we can put a character who is black or Hispanic into a white role, just know the reversal. And the only other rule, and this does not apply to Darcy, is that Mike and I cannot cast anyone that we cast last week, just to make this difficult game even more difficult for us. I also realized that we did not add Don King to the list of roles to recast for his one scene in this movie, but we can skip him. So, Mike, if you want to take it away, you can decide who we're going to go through in the order, and we're going to let Darcy go first.
Wait, okay, so the roles are the devil, Keanu, Charlize, Keanu's sister, Keanu's mom, right?
Yep.
And then his two neighbors?
The black couple, yep.
Okay, and then director.
Which I realize, as we're talking, I did not cast a director, so I need to think about that as we play the game, but that's totally fine.
Well, I only cast the three main, so my bad.
All right, well, why don't we start with the main man today and go with Keanu?
Since he is my number one, it's hard to recast him, but I definitely wanted Oscar Isaac as a recast for Keanu's role.
You matched me.
This no kidding!
Really?
We have a match.
We have a match for the first time. We have a match. I think he's also perfect for that role.
He's like my number two. He's so incredible and can be so intense, but like so endearing the same way that Keanu can. So then when I recast Keanu, my second was obviously like, who will he play well with as like a Pacino character? I wanted to go female. And so I originally had thought maybe Angela Bassett, because she has this very like non-aging aspect to her, which seems very sort of devilish and suspicious. Then I sort of thought who I would cast as Charlize. And I really like Elizabeth Olsen. Like meltdowns.
Oh, okay.
So pairing the Oscar and Elizabeth together, I recently watched their movie called In Secret.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I've seen a bunch of both of their movies and I've never heard of that one.
It's really good. It's kind of like a period piece.
Okay.
But not the evil role in that movie, but the other part is actually Jessica Lange, who I thought would be perfect as Al Pacino's role. So I essentially just recast this with the cast of that. Yeah, Oscar as Keanu, Elizabeth Olsen for Charlize Theron, and then Jessica Lange playing the devil.
And what I like about your devil choices is that both Jessica Lange and Angela Bassett are both affiliated with American Horror Story. So
yes,
both in that already creepy sort of vibe, sort of world. I like that a lot. Good picks.
I didn't think of any kind of director and I didn't do those other side characters, but that sort of trifecta of those three I really liked a lot.
That's fine. Mike and I can go through our picks, and if you think of someone you want to cast in any of those roles, feel free to jump in and let us know.
Okay, cool.
So, Mike, we have my pick for Keanu in Oscar Isaac. I think he's good because in the stuff he's done, he's been both, like, really pure of heart and also really kind of, like, war-battled sort of, you know, like...
Poe Dameron, you mean?
Well,
like,
I mean,
it's on like display war. Right there, right? Like, you know, you've got this really optimistic, war-torn hero kind of guy, yeah.
But also in, like, Show Me a Hero, that HBO miniseries that David Simon created, he is just, like, this beaten-down man. In Drive, he's sort of, like, I mean, like, in everything he does, he's, like, this guy who can just have such a range. So that's why I went with Oscar Isaac. Who'd you do, Mike?
Okay, so I went with Michael B. Jordan.
Ah.
Okay.
Watching this movie this time, I just pictured him doing this role, and I think that he could just really kill it. It's got the range. I think he's got it. And I also love Creed, obviously. He's amazing in that. That movie's amazing.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, and he's going to be in the new Black Panther movie, right?
Yeah, I think he's like the bad guy in that or something. So that'll be cool. I haven't really seen him. Well, I haven't really seen him in a lot of movies, to be quite honest. I think I've only really seen Creed and the Zeff movie.
Have you seen Fruitvale Station?
No, not yet, but I saw the terrible Zeff movie.
Oh, that awkward moment?
Yeah, so. Oh, and Fantastic or
Four. Fantastic Four.
Or Fan Four Stick.
Isn't he also in Hardball with Keanu?
Oh, that's right.
Hardball. He's one of the kids. Hardball, yeah.
and he's also in The Wire.
The hardball thing is, like, he has to quit because he's, like, too old playing softball, and he ends up dealing drugs in the projects. Yep. It's, like, really dark.
He's also dealing drugs in The Wire, though. I mean, Michael B. Jordan has had a rough string of characters, but he's always great in everything he does, so I could definitely see him in the Keanu role.
Cool. Why don't we go with Charlize for you, Joey?
This is my favorite pick for any recast we've done so far. I think, Mike, you should already know who I'm going to cast in this role. The first line out of her mouth, I was like, there's no one I can cast in this movie other than Riley Keough. She's an American honey. She's a Southern belle. She's like that firecracker. Like, this is like every time we've done a Charlize movie, I'm like, I don't know who the modern day Charlize is in this role. It's without a doubt in my brain, Riley Keough.
I love it. I love her. I love that pick. Yeah, and she wouldn't even have to fake the accent.
No, she got it. She's got it.
Got it. Yeah. Nice. I went with someone who I'm just recently familiar with because I started watching Atlanta, which is fantastic. Zazie Beetz plays...
Is that Donald Glover's girlfriend?
Donald Glover's girlfriend, and she's going to be Domino in Deadpool.
Oh.
She's just, like, really interesting on that show, and she would be good against Michael B. Jordan, and I'd like to see what happens. I almost cast Tessa Thompson, but I didn't want a Creed reunion between the two of them necessarily. But yeah, I'd like to see, you know, what kind of chemistry they got.
Well, the devil's a John, you know that.
Exactly. Speaking of the devil, how do you replace Al Pacino?
I think we talked about this on the Keanu Club episode. I'm taking Keanu from...
I knew it.
The one role, and I'm putting him in the other role, and I want Keanu as the devil, but I want Keanu channeling his Man of Tai Chi vibe and demeanor as that.
He's basically the devil in that, right? Like, he's a real string puller.
So yeah, because we've seen him do it before. I want to see him just like chew the scenery. In this movie, Pacino becomes Keanu, so I think it'd be funny if somehow, you know, Keanu became a young Pacino at the end. I don't know, who knows? But
interesting. You
know, Keanu as the devil, absolutely.
Right. I went someone who played God this year, and I want to see him play the devil someday, Javier Bardem.
Ah.
Oh, I would love to see that. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
I feel like he could really bring the grandeur to this role.
I was like, what movies had God in it? And I was like, oh, right, the religious movie.
The movie about the Bible. Yeah, so that's exciting. That's good. I'm excited to see all these versions, to be quite honest. Like, I wonder if you can miscast this movie. Like, is that even possible?
No, but my question for you, Mike, is that you said you had one character that you want to see in a role, and you sort of built the cast around him. Did we get to that person yet?
Oh, yeah, it was Michael B. Jordan. I want to see, yeah, I really feel like he could kill a role like this. Like, I want to see, even if it doesn't have to be, like, I want to see him in, like, a Firm-type movie, or, you know, somewhere where he's in a conspiracy in over his head. I would like to see that. Okay, who's next? How about the evil stepsister? Wow, it is an evil stepsister. Wow, I just realized that.
So for Christabella Andreoli, my first thought, although I think she's a little bit, like, I don't want her in this because I don't know enough about her. My first thought was to go to another Keanu connection in Claudia Gerini, who is the sister in John Wick 2 that he kills, or who kills herself. Because she's Italian, and she's like this sort of exotic person. Then I thought, because the sister is played by Connie Nielsen in this, and she's got that red hair, I was like, oh, I think Connie Britton could do this. Although now, since we started doing the podcast, I'm going to change my casting to be Nicole Kidman.
Oh. Wow, like that. She's almost a doppelganger.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think that would work.
I love Nicole Kidman. Just gets better and better, too. Yeah. All the stuff. This girl just, like, this actress just blows me away. I don't think she's ever done anything wrong yet. She's fairly new. Also an Academy Award winner. Ex Machina herself, Alicia Vikander?
Yes.
Vikander, yes.
I think that's a great, great pick.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I just saw the Tomb Raider trailer, and she's going to be amazing in that, too. She's just going to be known, you know what I'm saying? Like, in a year or two, like, it's just going to be, like, Nicole Kidman, like, her. Like, yeah.
And in real life, married to Michael Fassbender. So,
really?
Engaged or something. Yeah, they're together. I don't know if they're dating or engaged or married, but yeah, both played robots. We just spent a lot of time last night in real life talking about Michael Fassbender on the Haywire episode of Cinemakers, which, as you're listening to this, will come out in 2 months, maybe? Man, time is so weird when we're recording these ahead of time. But in 2 months, listen to us talk about Michael Fassbender and how great a year 2011 was for him. Darcy, do you have a pick for Christabella? Like, while we were talking, did you come up with somebody you wanted to cast in there, or no?
I didn't.
That's totally fine.
I'm sitting here trying to rack my brain, and I, like, can't think of any actresses that I can't think of any at all.
Let's go with Keanu's mom. What's Keanu's character again?
Kevin Lomax.
Kevin. Okay, so...
He doesn't feel like a Kevin. I can see why you're upset. Or not upset, but like... why you're confused.
I remember like when the guy from the newspaper starts following him and calling him Kevin, and I'm like, is that his name in this movie? Kevin? It just doesn't stick. But let's go with his mom. Who did you have? She doesn't have a huge role, but it's pretty, you know, important.
So this is a little bit of a thinker. I wanted to pick someone who, in my role with Keanu as the devil, I wanted to pick someone that Keanu had basically a connection to like earlier in his career. Uh-huh. And that's why I was sort of thinking about Sandra Bullock, because I was just like, you know, they play it together. And
I think I know who you picked.
Do you? I guess the question is. And then I went to Lori Petty, and I was like, it's not really what I went with.
Not early enough.
What I wound up going with, Fionnuala Flanagan, Miss McGill herself, sipping Miss McGill's tea.
Oh my God.
All the way back from Youngblood. She was a couple years older than Judith Ivy, who plays Keanu's mom in this. I think they're born in like 47 and 51 or something. By the way, the actress who plays Keanu's mom in this is only 13 years older than Keanu. So that's weird. But yeah, so I mean, going back to Youngblood, we didn't see Keanu sip tea with Miss McGill, but we know that it has happened, and I would love to see a shout-out to the real hardcore Keanu Club fans that Miss McGill herself comes back as Keanu's mom in this, in the remake, where she's actually Keanu's former lover. So that's what I went with.
I thought you were going to go with, is it Deanna Diabo from Flying?
Olivia Diabo.
Olivia Diabo.
Oh, yeah.
From Flying.
No, I went even... earlier. No, maybe around the same time at least.
I think Youngbloods was like one or two earlier than that or something, yeah.
But yeah, definitely an 80s love.
I guess, or Lori Loughlin would have been another good one, right?
Yeah.
car movie or whatever.
Although I feel like, you know, I can't see Lori Loughlin as like a mom type, even though, you know, she was Aunt Becky or whatever, but like, it's the same thing like Marissa Tomei, like she's just hot Aunt May, like Aunt Becky would be, you know, Lori Loughlin would be like hot Aunt Becky or whatever, you know what I mean? So like, it's, I got a roadblock in my mind, but I just, you know, I love the idea of casting Miss McGill in that role, so... Who'd you go with, Mike?
So I went with another Academy Award winner recently, also referred to, well, Bardem was never referred to as God, but she certainly was in a recent film. She assembled the Suicide Squad herself, Miss Viola Davis.
Oh, the Academy Award winning film Suicide Squad?
Yeah, it is, right? For like sound design or something? Or
costume. I think costumes.
Costume.
Or makeup. No, makeup.
Oh,
makeup?
I think it's extremeness or...
It's Twisted.
Twistedness, yeah. It won the Academy Award for
most twisted film.
Most twisted.
I don't know how to say this without sounding racist, but you're bringing a lot of color to this. Like, you are doing something I'm not able to do. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I told you, like, I don't know if I'm going to keep this strategy, but for this movie and last movie, I found like one actor who I felt would be like a core, and then sort of built like a crew around them to play around. So I don't think this luck is going to last, but I'm having fun.
You never know.
I thought of somebody for my mom.
Oh.
Keanu's mom. I kind of really like Frances Conroy in that spot.
Okay.
The mom from 6 Feet Under.
Sure. Another one from American Horror Story, too.
Oh, true. Yeah, she played the maid.
I like that a lot. That's a nice pick.
Do you want to do your neighbors as a couple? You want to reveal, we'll reveal them both?
This is one that I wasn't sure, you know, dear listener, if you've been listening, you know that Mike and I struggle with ages in terms of how to recast people. We don't know exactly how old people are supposed to be. We have trouble, you know, casting pretty much people who are too old for every role. I wasn't sure, and actually, Darcy, I want your opinion, because I talked to Mike about this. Keanu, I think, in this movie is probably about 30. Would you say he and Charlize are about 30-ish?
Yeah,
probably. How old would you say the black lawyer who comes down to recruit him, how old do you think he is? Is he, like, about the same age, or is he older?
I would say, like, maybe at least, like, 4 to 5 years older.
But not too much older, but a little bit older.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure. I actually had, you know, I cast somebody really young. I was like, that didn't feel right. So who I went with here for him, just because we saw him as a lawyer in American Crime Story, another Ryan Murphy thing. Man, between Darcy and me, we're giving so much love to Ryan Murphy shows. But I went with Courtney B. Vance, Johnny Cochran himself from OJ.
Oh.
So I did him because he pulled off that distinguished older lawyer. I think he's like 47 in real life, so I don't think that's too crazy. But then his wife in this movie, I saw as definitely a lot younger, sort of a little bit of a trophy wife situation. And I went with Natalie Emmanuel, Missandei from Game of Thrones. I think partially because of the hair, similar type of hair. And so, you know, me and my hair fixation in terms of can't shake that from my character recognition. But also just because she's a really pretty young actress who also can be really tough and scary and intimidating at the same time. So I think she could definitely rock that part. So yeah, Courtney B. Vance and Natalie Emmanuel.
Nice.
Thank you.
I don't know where I came up with this choice, but I went... I actually cast a real-life couple. They're actors, primarily known for comedy, although one of them is getting a lot of attention for his own movie this year, which is in my top five. So I went with Jordan Peele and Chelsea Peretti as the neighbors.
That's good.
You broke a cardinal rule in terms of turning a not-white character white. But,
oh, did I?
But,
damn.
But you made up for it in other ways. And I like that real-life couple. Plus, I would love to see Chelsea Peretti just tormenting like Charlize or Charlize's replacement. So I am on board that. I am totally okay with that.
Okay, good. I was a little worried. I wasn't sure of like how hard to break that rule if it was going to be a problem. But I'm glad.
No, I think it's fine because you were able to make up for it in other ways. I think it's totally fine to have her in that role. Plus, I just love her, so I'm gonna let Chelsea Peretti be in anything in any role.
Sweet.
I'm okay with it.
I think she's hilarious, but she also like scares me a little bit.
Oh,
like, yeah, she's terrifying. Let's just call it what it is. Yeah. But yeah, and Jordan Peele is just like great in everything. Like I love Key and Peele, and like the stuff that he does on that show tends to lean more toward like the more twisted stuff. So I feel like he could really flash a couple sinister smiles in this movie.
Joy, I was just going to say I liked your choice for Natalie Emmanuel, but I also feel like I would replace the other guy with Sterling K. Brown, who's also from the American Crime Story, who plays the lawyer. I really love Sterling K. Brown, and I feel like he might fit that spot real perfectly.
I think I cast him in one other thing. Like I love him in just about everything he does. I feel like I cast him in something else. I don't remember what I put him in, but yeah, I definitely thought of him and I just wanted to go with a slightly older, but yeah, both of those, absolutely.
Oh, he's in This Is Us, right?
Yeah, he's in This Is Us. Yep. Do you have a pick for who you would replace my Natalie Emmanuel part, his wife?
I like her. I like your pick for her, so.
All right, then I'm going to put it in there.
Yeah.
We have another match. Now, Mike, I still don't have a director. I'm going to think about the director now.
All right.
Is Jordan Peele your director, too?
He is my director, too. Yeah, actually. I actually thought of him as director first because I just, like, I want to see how... I want his take on the corporate world and the lawyer world. And this elitism is, like, right up his alley.
No, absolutely.
I feel like at this point I should just pick Ryan Murphy for my director.
It works for me. I'm going to write it down. I'm going to... Oh, God, that's a bad idea. I think because I have... Well, let me think. What type of movie am I trying to make here? So I have a movie that is helmed by Oscar Isaac, and Keanu Reeves is an old man, and Riley Keough. So I feel like it's similar sort of in tone to what we're going with here. I think, you know, we talked about Javier Bardem earlier. I think in a different kind of recast, I think someone like Darren Aronofsky could work well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually, I know who I'm going to go with. I am going to go with, similar, I think, to Mike's in that he directed a horror film this year, I'm going to go with Trey Edward Schultz, who did It Comes at Night this year. He also did Creesha a couple years ago. I think he's able to do that, like, tone really well, but also that really small, intimate story, whether it's an aunt returning to her family on Thanksgiving or just a couple with their kid in the woods trying to survive.
Yeah.
And, you know, a story about loss and a story about grief and a story about all that kind of stuff. So that's sort of a on-the-spot pick, but actually, the more I think about it, I think it's a good pick. So I like it. I can dig it.
Yeah, I like that as well.
Do you have an idea for who you would put in yours as your director, Darcy?
I think I would do Ryan Murphy.
Oh, right. You said that. You said that.
Yeah.
Said that. So let's see here. I think that's everybody, right, Mike?
Yeah, that was all for today. Seven's, you know, I feel like seven's a good limit.
Yeah.
After that, I start to get anxiety about, like, who I'm going to cast.
We'll give you one more chance, Darcy. No pressure here, but did you think of someone for the sister? Or are you still going to abstain from the sister?
I think I feel like maybe, actually, Zoe Kravitz might actually be really good in that spot.
Yep. I like that a lot, too.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I'm going with.
I like that a lot. I like all, the frustrating thing. Well, there's two frustrating elements about this game. Number one is the pressure to come up with people who fit the role. But then number two is to, like, hear what everybody picks and be like, oh, I want to see all these movies now. Like, I want to see all these people in a movie together. Like, I love this movie as it is, but if any of these movies got remade, I would see any of them.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Although Darcy's would probably be like a straight to FX.
It would be a miniseries version, which would also be cool. Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There is a lot to work with here, a lot to sort of play with in terms of that, so absolutely. One other thing, we're going to start new on this episode is we are, as we're going along, keeping track of what might be nominated for the Watch the Throne Awards. And as you're listening to this, you can go back and listen to the Keanu Club Awards, which Darcy was on as our fan vote announcer. I don't know, that's a terrible title. Darcy, what title do you want on that podcast? You can pick whatever title you want.
Oh my goodness.
We informally called Jess the Vanna White role, but that's sort of, it's not demeaning, but it's not as important as it could be.
Yeah, I don't know. It's almost just like, because what am I? Like, I'm an announcer, but I also give commentary?
Yeah, you're like a commentator, you're an announcer, you're a commentator, you're a play-by-play person. You're the color commentator. How about that? Because there's like the play-by-play on a sport game, and then the color commentator, you're like, you're the one who has the interesting things to say with the unique takes and the hot takes.
Yeah. Okay. That, but in a title.
So, as you are listening to this, you can go back and listen to the Keanu Club Awards, the Golden Hot Dogs, where color commentator Darcy DeBose told us who the fans voted for every one of those categories. As we're going through Watch the Throne to make our lives easier a year from now, we are going to track the different categories that we might want to nominate the films we watch for. Yes. Mike, for this one, I did a few different ones. Let me open up the spreadsheet right here. Starting off the top, I think that this is an early contender. I don't know if it's going to stick. I think there's a chance that this could be best film. It's not going to win, I don't think, but yeah, I think it's worthy of nomination.
Yeah, it's super strong. It's like, she's not the main character, but she's a supporting actor, and she's super strong in it.
I also think because she's so strong in it, I think this is a pretty slam dunk for best role of Marianne
Possibly.
Lomax
yeah.
in The Devil's
okay.
Advocate. We got to go best death.
Unfortunately,
for sure.
Be in there.
I also added Best Freak Out. It's her moment in the church. I think that's a pretty solid
and even
starting
the
point for
she's
that.
Got like a couple good freakouts. Can we base it on just like the whole role in general? She freaks out really well, like when she does, because she screams. I don't really remember seeing this a whole lot in movies, but she screams at the top of her voice like several times in this.
So I'm gonna say in the church / the whole movie, basically, in The Devil's Advocate. And then the last one that I nominated this for, I want to hear your input if you want to have any other categories nominated. To make Darcy happy, I think we got to give Best Male Actor nod to Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, that's a must.
That's a must. Darcy, do you think anything else? So the other categories that we have, Best Female Actress / Role, Best Song, Best Line, Best Fight, Best Love Story, Worst Role, Worst Film, which is not going to be here. Do you think anything else from this film, or a new category, anything else from this film that you think deserves special recognition in the ultimate Watch the Throne? Maybe the Golden Wallpaper Awards, who knows?
Oh, yeah, maybe if that comes up again. What is this, two out of like four that you've done so far?
Two out of six, but it's two out of the last four, yeah, so
yeah.
It's prevalent. Anything else of this movie from either of you that you think deserves special recognition? Not necessarily to win, but to be nominated. It's just an honor to be nominated.
You already said like best like freak out.
Maybe
that would've kind of been mine.
A best accent? I'm not sure if that's going to come around again, but I think in Atomic Blonde, she has an accent, if I recall, but I don't know.
She rocks a British accent, yeah.
Did she have one in That
no,
Thing You Do?
No, not really. I don't know. I think everyone was just supposed to be from SoCal.
No, she was just a little uppity, kind of.
Gotcha. Okay.
Oh, that was Pennsylvania. Sorry, but
Pennsylvania.
It was shot in California, and it felt like it took place there. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, but I added in a new category, Best Accent / Voice. So I'll say Southern Belle, Southern Charm, Devil's Advocate. I like that. Anything else of this movie that deserves special recognition, specifically for like what she did, but also, you know, maybe the movie as a whole?
We didn't really do it with Cage or Keanu, but like Best Transformation, like something like that, right?
Because yeah,
I know it's like Furiosa
too.
And the movie Monster, like I don't know what else, maybe Aeon Flux, I haven't seen it, but like becoming that character and like really going all the way or something. I don't know.
So pure to dead inside in The Devil's Advocate. I like that. Best character transformation. I like that a lot. That's cool. Good thinking back, Mike, do you think that any of the other past films that we've done deserve recognition in either of those categories? Best transformation? I don't think. Urban Harvest, no. 2 Days in the Valley, no. That Thing You Do, no. Hollywood Confidential, Trial and Error, no. best accent slash voice. I don't think any of those.
Not yet.
So,
all right.
Cool. Well, I like it. So there we go. So these are a little bit of a teaser taster for the ultimate golden wallpapers, or to be determined.
Well, it's either that, or right now it's between the wallpaper or a piece of golden corn, basically.
Or the golden chicken wing from Popeyes.
Oh, man, that's right.
The golden chicken sponsored by Popeyes.
Yeah, the less corn, the better.
The less corn, the better. So at the end of the show, I want to steal once again from Nico and feature another podcast on our network. We've already profiled Keanu Club, so I don't want to spend too much. And we talked about Keanu so much on here. But Darcy was on the final episode of Phase 1 of Keanu Club. She was on the To the Bone episode.
Yes.
There was one movie. Oh, I just saw Novitiate, which came out about a month ago as you're listening to this. And one of the girls from To the Bone was also in Novitiate. So I was like, where do I know that girl from? I was like, oh, right. That's where I know her from. And she's also in a Cage movie. She's also in Trespass. She's the daughter in Trespass, and she's in Novitiate too. So that's pretty cool. But the podcast, Mike, what podcast do you want to feature? What do you want to talk about here at the end? What other show on our network? This is coming out. This episode comes out January 5th.
Not sure what's out. Did we talk about?
No, just pick a show.
I know.
What have we talked about so far? Go ahead.
All right. So I recently discovered that a certain soft drink beverage is still in production and not a moment too soon, because I can now go to my 7-Eleven, grab a can of NOS.
Yep.
Bring it home, pop it open,
yep.
Put in a Fast and Furious movie, and then go over and listen to the guys on Too Fast, Too Forever, where they, for the rest of their lives, apparently, are going to be watching one Fast and Furious movie a month forever.
Darcy, do you like those movies?
You know, I'm not a fan, but I don't have anything against them.
Well, that's not a terrible
very
answer.
Diplomatic.
But it's fine. But yeah, as you're listening to this, Joe and I put out the second episode, Too Fast, Too Furious on Too Fast, Too Forever. That came out 4 days ago, so go listen to that. Mike will be on in about 7 months for at least the first episode of Lap 2, but we are at the very beginning. We're still in the early stretches of this quarter mile that we're driving one quarter mile at a time. Grab a can of NOS, grab a Corona if that's your indulgence. Grab any brew you want as long as it's Corona, and go listen to Too Fast, Too Forever. Go listen to Keanu Club with Darcy. Go listen to all of our shows at cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, and at cageclubpod on Twitter. We have lots of shows. We've got two new shows starting next month. We've got Mike's show starting sometime.
In production, season
you,
one.
The listener probably have a better idea than we do right now when that'll come out. But cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, at cageclubpod on Twitter. Email us, watch@cageclub.me. Let us know what you think of the recasts, which movie you'd like to see most. Probably the one with Jordan Peele behind the camera, but who knows? I mean, all of them are probably good. Go to those places, email us, let us know you're listening. Thank you for listening. That's all I got. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Darcy DuBose, and we'll see you next time on Watch the Throne.
I've said just the one thing for me. Please. Show me your tattoo.